Out the First podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna and my pronouns are she and her.
I'm Aline and my pronouns are she and her.
Every couple of weeks or months, depending on our mental health
and editing schedule,
we will get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 109. Reading slumps.
It's so uplifting.
Sorry.
Joining us today, we have Kelly Jensen, the former librarian, editor, and author, known for her work with Book Riot and her books Don't Call Me Crazy, 33 Voices Start the Conversation About Mental Health, and Here We Are, Feminism for the Real World. And if you don't have your hands on these, you need to get your hands on them, because they are inclusive, intersectional, interesting collections of works.
Yeah, you should add them to your library for sure.
Hey, hi, Kelly.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a thrill. It's a thrill to meet you. I know that Anna's met you in real life, but I haven't, so I'm super excited.
Same. I haven't met you, but I've talked with you before. Internet
we
talk.
We have appreciated each other's cats.
Yes, we have mutual cat love.
And I taught your cat something today too.
Right.
Yes. I'm so excited. We're going to have to get a video of it and we will be sure to tag you.
So I introduced this episode as reading slumps and you said that was a depressing term. So off the top, I want to talk about what we mean by reading slump and what we could possibly rename it.
I want to say that the inspiration for this conversation is an article that Kelly wrote on Book Riot called 7 Tips for Reading with Mental Health Challenges. It was back in January, and I read this when it came out, and I was like, yeah, 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 through the whole thing. And I sent it to Anna, or she sent it to me, because I never remember who sees things first. And I was like, we need to talk about this with Kelly on the podcast if she's willing. So we're so happy and grateful. And yes, what should we call it besides a slump?
I don't think that's a terrible term. It's kind of a crummy feeling more than a crummy term. But I guess maybe a better way to phrase it would just be like reading breaks, reading challenges.
Involuntary reading break.
Hiatus.
Yeah.
Oh, reading hiatus.
Yeah, hiatus is good. Reading hiatus is good, yeah.
See, I think slump is like a baseball term. Like when someone's in a batting slump, it's not necessarily the worst, because the implication is that they're going to make some adjustments to their swing or whatever with the help of their batting coach, and they're going to start hitting again and get out of the slump, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I still think a hiatus sounds better.
Well, I called it, what did I call it when I was I think I had lost my reading mojo.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, too.
I might have said that because I was a 200 book a year person for most of my adult life. And then I got to my late 30s and it all went to hell. And it's been almost, surely it hasn't been 10 years. It might have been 10 years that I've been struggling.
So when you say struggling, you mean from my observation, I would say you read 10 to 15 books a year?
Yeah, if we're print books, and audio adds to that total.
Right.
But that's about right. I am not seized by something more frequently than once a month or so.
Wow, that's a big change from 200 a year. And I only say that because I was thinking, I used to be a 200 book a year person, and I'm down to I don't know, 120 feels about right, which is what, 12 a month or about one a week.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess it's two a week. I can do math.
How's the math?
It's okay.
Really, I guess that's three a week. Which is funny, I'm good at math, just apparently not when I'm podcasting. I think I would have panic attacks if I was not reading more than, a small handful. But I think that's less a result of like my personal reading choices and more like because of what I do.
So I'm going to ask Eileen a few questions. And before
we've determined that I'm the slumpiest of the slumpers.
Well, no, because my situation is a little weird, is a little different.
No, yours is, I look forward to how you're going to articulate yours.
Do you feel a sense of pressure, like you should be reading more?
When Kelly just said that she would have panic attacks if she wasn't reading more than I'm reading or the quantity that she's reading or something, I thought, oh, yeah, well, and it is a source of stress for me to not be reading and to not be consuming narrative the way I once did. Although I will say that I am consuming narrative. I have usually a couple of TV shows that I'm working my way through on Netflix, and I listen to audiobooks in the car on my 10-minute commute. Right, it takes me very long time to get
up. The other day I was like, can I call you when you're driving home from this faraway meeting, and because you have hands free in your car? And you were like,
because it was audiobook time that I don't have. And I started taking a yoga class in two towns over, and that gives me almost 40 minutes of audiobook time once a week. There's stress involved. I don't have panic attacks. I feel inadequate as a reader's advisor and librarian on some levels, but I still have my trivia brain that collects details about books and titles and authors from reviews and from book buzzes and so on. So I've found ways to continue to do my job well, but I miss it. I mean, I still have 25 romance writers that I want to read everything they write, and I just don't. I'm 10 years behind on them. And every now and then, I'll find something that I'll sit down and read. You've seen it happen to me where I am like, oh, this is great, and I'm not doing anything but reading it for a little while. But then there are great lulls, and none of that stuff is stuff that I routinely read before.
Reading lull is good.
Reading lull, yes.
I like reading lull.
Yeah, I like that too. It's interesting that you bring up, you know, doing your work as a reader's advisor and being in this reading slump. Do you read a lot of reviews then? Because one of the problems I have, and I guess this is sort of the opposite of slump. I know, I'm like taking this in a totally
reading
like,
hump. Left.
Not even a reading hump. I would just say because of the quantity of books I read and like because so much of my job is talking about books, I do read a lot of reviews, and sometimes I get in this situation where I literally cannot remember if I read the book or just read a lot of reviews of the book.
So I don't read reviews as attentively as I ought, particularly since I just said that that was like how I do it. But I more listen to, we make sure to go to Book Expo every year, and we make sure to go to all of the Book Buzz events at Book Expo that publishers put on for librarians. And we also go to New York in the fall for a Book Buzz event that is an all-day thing with 20 plus publishers talking about upcoming books. And I really get a lot out of that. Mm-hmm. Seeing covers, hearing them talk about, like, you know, it's Gone Girl meets Frozen, or however they choose to characterize.
I want to read that too. As soon as you said that, I was like,
We will, our next episode will be a Book Buzz episode.
Right.
Based on what we brought back from Book Expo. So stay tuned.
Yeah. I take it in as much as I can. So I subscribe to lots of publisher marketing newsletters, and they come through my work email, and I open them and I scroll through them and I just like let it wash over me, and stuff begins to lodge in my brain the third time I've seen something. And, you know, that's part of what I do. Like, I don't have rules set up in my email to put them all in folders. I look at them when they come in, and I cultivate patrons at the library to tell me what they're reading and to keep me up to date on what's interesting in their particular areas. I have 3 or 4 people who come in to me weekly to talk about reading.
Hmm.
Well, so we got off on a little Elling tangent. I don't mean to pick on you.
That's okay. Please pick on me. I want to share.
I'm going to just describe my reading lull behavior.
Yeah.
And then we can talk a little bit about like mental health and yep. Because the article that started us is the 7 tips for reading with mental health issues. Was it issues?
Challenges, not issues.
Right.
And I can tell you that my loss of my reading mojo can be traced back to the beginning of my what I have come to understand to be depression that I did not recognize for many years. And then it took me many, many years to sort of be like, hey, maybe I'm anxious, because I never passed the depression quiz. Still doesn't work on me because I don't feel sad. I'm just filled with rage. And so I'm still kind of confused by that. And I'm frustrated by, like, no, I never feel sad. I just always want to kill everyone. And that's how it manifests in me. But that is what is the cause of this shift in my reading behavior. I really want the world to know about Anna's reading behaviors.
All right. So I have a reading log. And I checked it yesterday to see how many books I'm currently reading. And
like currently reading,
like if I picked up the book right now, I'd be like, oh, that's where I was. I can start off. I remember what I'm doing. Here I am.
Okay.
I'm reading this book. So, Aline, would you like to, did I tell you the number? Would you like to guess what the number is?
Well, I mean, we talk about this and it usually ranges from 14 to 20.
Whoa.
Well, right now it's at 30.
So Anna's not doing well right now. Because why is this?
So, there, something I've noticed about myself is that the more stressed or anxious or however you want to put it, I feel, the more I like want to start a new narrative. I don't want to put down a narrative. And today I finished a book, which was a good book. And instead of like going to my list of 30 books, now 29 earlier today, and being like, well, I was in the middle of this book. I have it right here in front of me, or it's on my phone. Like, it's not far away. I could pick it up and continue to read it. Like, this book I has been assigned to me by Booklist. Maybe I should continue reading this book. I started another book.
Yeah.
I exhibit some characteristics of ADHD where, like, my attention has to flip around to other things. Otherwise, I can't concentrate on anything at all. And I can keep all of these narratives straight in my head. Like, if I go to my reading log, I could tell you the plots of all the books and that I intend to keep reading them. And I do sometimes, like, I do go back, but I have a start date and an end date on them. And let me see. I finished reading Royals by
Rachel Hawkins
on May 23rd, and I started it on June 14th, 2018.
So it took you almost a year?
Yeah.
But she's not kidding or exaggerating when she says that she has these narratives stuck in her head. She doesn't use bookmarks very often, and she can pick up a book and find where she was without much trouble. And when she is telling me about the audiobook she was listening to today or the book she was reading on her lunch break, I'll say, which one is this? Because I don't know, she'll be like, oh, I couldn't believe that they like went on a road trip or whatever is going on in the book. And, she tells me about what she's reading and I don't always remember what she's read and what she's finished, but she routinely finishes and starts more books. This is a living organism, this 30 item list, because she is attending to 2 or 3 narratives daily, at least.
I have been in the position where I am driving my car and I'm listening to an audiobook, and I get to a stoplight, and I like want to pick up a book from the passenger seat and start reading it, even though I'm listening to an audiobook.
Whoa!
So, I I haven't put a lot of thought into, like, how this intersects with my mental health. But I think there's a connection there.
Yeah.
And I am able to, like, look at my list and be like, you know what? I am not going to go back to that one. I'm dropping it off the list. Like, I started a new bullet journal, and I transferred my currently reading list. And, like, some of the stuff, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to read that. And so it didn't get transferred.
Did you write DNFs in the last book? Or
No, I just...
Just left it.
I just left it. Because what happens is when I finish it, you know, every month or two, I go into Goodreads and I, like, record what I read.
So, on the topic of DNFs, I have notes in journals and notebooks and on little slips of paper that I can find in my desk upstairs about what page I stopped reading a book on in the 90s.
Okay.
Because I am such a completist that I am convinced I'm going to go finish reading that book that I stopped reading for whatever reason I stopped reading it. I have, like, lists of these things because I'm like, oh, I was on page 184 of this book and, you know, and I don't have the date on it, but I know that I have been doing this since the 90s, which is a whole different kettle of fish.
All right. Let's ask Kelly, you know, why Reading with Mental Health Challenges is the title of her article. Is that drawing from experiences that you have?
For sure. So it took me a long time to come to terms with my own mental health. And when I finally did go get help for it, one of the things that I was doing afterward, like as part of sort of understanding my own symptoms and sort of understanding what causes my lows, what causes my anxiety, is I just started thinking about a lot of the habits I have. And again, I was somebody who was reading like 200 some books a year. And part of it was because I felt like I had to. And I realized that that was partially anxiety, that I felt like if I wasn't reading everything, then I couldn't do my job well.
Mm-hmm. Was this when you were a librarian or was this when you started a book riot or?
Both, kind of over the course of both of these time periods. And something about sort of digging into my reading habits, as I was also sort of charting my mental health, I came to realize that I had some habits about reading that tied in with my own mental health. So sometimes when I was anxious or depressed, I would like disappear into books for days and days and days and would read really voraciously, which on the outside looks awesome, right? And like, I'm somebody who has kept a reading log of everything I've read since like seventh grade. So I have like a paper list of everything that I've written since then. And so on paper, it looks awesome. Like I'm reading this many books, but ultimately like none of it is sticking at all. Like it's just very much in my eyeballs and like out of my head in no time. And there are times when I would look at the things I wrote about a book. So I also, I like to keep notes on books and I do put reviews on Goodreads, but they tend to be shorter than they used to be. When I go back and look at some of the stuff that I wrote prior to really understanding my mental health, I kind of can see where I was. Some reviews are very clearly like I didn't really absorb the book. It was just a way to kill time. It was just a way to like get through the day as opposed to sort of sitting with what was going on internally. So part of my managing my own mental health has come to terms with like sometimes I can't read. And sometimes like when I feel I need to read 5 million things at once and disappear into books and reading is when I like have to stop myself and question whether that's really what I want to be doing or if that's sort of the escape route I'm taking from dealing with like what's going on inside. I never used to be somebody who thought I was especially triggered by books, and I don't think I am, but I do find that I get really angry if I'm struggling with my own mental health and I read something related to mental health and I don't feel like it's being taken seriously. And I don't know how to put those two pieces together. That's still something I'm sort of working through, but it's not so much being triggered as it is feeling like there's a lack of understanding, like, how all-encompassing mental health challenges can be. I think I answered your question. I think I also went on a tangent.
Tangents are good. Like, we're for tangents. Yeah.
No, it's a good tangent, though. I think that happened to me recently. I read a couple of books, and I finished one, and Anna asked me how it was, and I said, I need my next book to not have a woman in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, like, nebulous thing. It wasn't something that was the two books that I had read back to back. That was as specific as I could be, is women in bad situations. One of them was an unhealthy relationship, and one of them was something else that I can't even remember. But I was like, all right, I need somebody to be happy, because I don't want to see myself
mm-hmm.
in a central character right now. I want to read a central character that I want to aspire to, or I need to relate to the main characters in books that I read and enjoy. I'm a character-based reader, and I also don't want to relate too hard. I've never been somebody who wanted my experience reflected back to me in what I was reading, because I'm having to deal with it myself, thanks. I don't need to have it, like, emphasized.
Mm-hmm.
But I can really feel what you're saying about if they're not doing it right, or if they're not doing it justice, or if they're not, like, reflecting something that you understand, it's just wrong, and you're, like, mad, and this is not doing it.
And sometimes, like, it's justified, and other times it's, like, it's not at all. It's just literally where I'm at in my head, and feeling like I can't relate. And that's not the fault of the author or the story. It's, like, my own brain, you know, insisting on something that I can't give it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing really, so, like, the last year and a half since my mental health book came out, I've been doing really well. And I think part of it is, like, putting together that book in and of itself was rough. It was a very, very challenging book to put together, to edit. And since then, like, I've been doing really well in terms of reading. And I've always been somebody who is good at DNFing. Like, I have no problem stopping a book. I don't, like, note what page I'm done on. I don't have any, like, false sense of, like, I'm going to go back to it. Like, I'm very much, like, not attached to that. And now I've found that I've gotten even better at reading between the lines when it comes to even a book description and where I'm at with my mental health. So, like, keywords can be enough sometimes for me to be like, all right, this is not what I need right now. This is not going to do well for me. And instead sort of, like, put that aside for when I'm in a better place. Or conversely, like, if I'm not in a great place, like, sometimes when I'm not in a great mental health place or I'm really anxious, I want something like a rom-com where literally it's not my life at all. You know, I've been married happily for many, many years, but sometimes I want that, like, falling in love story because, like, that's a feeling that's I haven't had in a long time, you know, because it's just, like, it's always been there. So I feel like the better I've gotten to know my own mental health, the better I've been about understanding what books are for me at a particular time and which ones might be better at a different time. And also, like, feeling less attached to finishing a book. If I start something, it's not working, I put it aside and I'm like, you know what, maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I won't. Maybe it's just not a book for me. And that's okay. Like, there are, you know, Raghunathan's whole philosophy is that every book has its reader and every reader has its book. And that's something that I try to keep in mind when it's just, like, not clicking for me for whatever reason.
So I think this bears emphasizing for our listeners, like, a lot of librarians think that they need to read everything or everything in their area. Like, YA librarian might feel like they need to read all of the YA books that are coming out. And, you know, I've talked to some of them are like, I haven't written an adult book for years, you know.
Mm.
And that it's okay not to read everything, and it's okay not to finish things. Just let them go. Mm. Nancy Pearl says...
Oh, she has this great calculation that she says, subtract your age from 100, and that number is the number of pages that you should give a book. So if you're 99 and it doesn't grab you on page one, then you can set it aside. It's really cool to think about.
But with 50.
It works well for me. I read the first 30 pages of a book on my lunch break today. I was very proud of myself. I took a drink of my beer when you mentioned Ranganathan. I think that any conversation with librarians, you have to drink if you talk about Ranganathan. I really feel really strongly about what Anna was just saying. And I try to be very open with the truth that I don't read much because I am a good reader's advisor and I've read a lot in my time and I can connect you with books that you will enjoy whether I've read them or not. And yep. We all in our different milieus connect people. We have our processes for remembering things in ways that make us able to do what we need to do. So I can talk about books and I can talk about genres and authors off the cuff to patrons that walk up to the desk and I can take them to the shelf and they can walk out with a stack of books and they'll come back and tell me if they were hits or misses. And all of that goes into this database in my brain that I don't have to have read them.
Yeah.
I try to cultivate that idea among people because we've all had conversations with librarians who've read everything or who give the impression of reading everything, or they're always consuming at an alarming rate, possibly as much as 120 books a year.
No, I think, yeah.
But you know what I mean? And I'm still able to talk to you about stuff. And that's what we teach when we're talking about this in programs.
And also for librarians to get away from statements like, well, everyone's read this, or everyone knows this, or well, of course you've done that. Because of the kind of blanket assumption that makes other librarians and patrons feel like, well, damn, I haven't read that, so I must be lacking in some way.
Yeah, and you know, like, as much as I really do believe, like, especially in libraries, it's important to have some knowledge of what the different genres do, like some of the key aspects of them, like what separates them from one another. I don't think it's at all necessary to have to read across all genres. In part, and I guess I say this in part because, like, I have my own reading preferences. That doesn't mean that I don't at least stay on top of the books that don't interest me because I don't work in libraries anymore, but I do. My job is still very much about reader's advisory. It's very much about connecting readers with books. I don't read a lot of fantasy. I don't read a lot of high fantasy. Me personally, it's very, very challenging for me to read that. And I like being open about the fact that it's hard for me to read it. I just don't have the, like, mental capacity to keep world building straight. Like, it just doesn't connect with me. Whereas I know for readers, like, that is the real draw for that genre. So I don't want to read those books because they don't give me anything. They frustrate me, and sometimes, like, that really does impact my mental health. Like, I just feel dumb. So what I do, because I know I sort of lack in that area, is at least keep an eye on a review. Or I know people who are just, like, fanatical about those books, and I try to, like, pack away a keyword or two of what they say about the book so that when somebody asks, I can pull those recommendations out. And I could also be honest and say, you know, this is not, like, an area I'm super knowledgeable about from my own reading experience because, like, it doesn't work for me. And I think that there's a place there, too, to sort of bring it back to mental health in that we can't make people feel bad about, you know, not connecting with a book or not connecting with a genre. Or I think there is some shame around not necessarily getting a book or understanding, like, what the hype is about a book. Sometimes you just don't connect and sometimes you just don't get it. And that doesn't reflect on anything except that, like, didn't work for you. I'm trying to, like, think of an example and I, of course, can't, like, off the top of my head.
That's how reader's advisory works.
Exactly. Yeah. So to what you were saying in terms of like, it's okay not to read it all because you physically can't. And also, you know, if you do struggle with any sort of mental health challenges, like that can make it worse, you know?
So you use the word shame, and I feel like mm-hmm. we have, so, you know, librarians are supposed to love books and they're supposed to spend their time reading. Yeah. This is a stereotype.
Yep.
And we carry a lot of internalized expectations as well as like the stereotype that we're supposed to love books and we're supposed to know about mm-hmm. all books. And, you know, we all know here that we do a lot more like looking up of information than we have like storing it in our heads, because if someone asks you point blank, then your brain disappears and you're like, mm-hmm. I don't know any books.
Poof, I've never heard of a book. What is book?
And yes, I want to go farther always. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the suggestions that in your 7 tips, which is that it's okay not to read at all.
Yep.
It's okay for our patrons who only want to come in for DVDs. That's all they ever do. That's fine. Yep. They're not reading. It's not a gateway to reading. We're not trying to catch them. We're not trying to make them read. That is fine. No one has to read. They are not worse people if they don't read. Yep. We are not worse people if we don't read. That is okay.
Yeah. So I've been saying this since I started my library career back in the day, and I still believe it now. Reading is an activity. It's a hobby. It's a thing people do because they enjoy doing it, right? Obviously, we have to read in some contexts, like because that's how we communicate. But picking up a book and reading it is an activity. Now, so is playing basketball, so is riding a bike, so is playing a video game, so is watching movies. And frankly, we don't shame people who don't like to do those things. And yet we do it for reading, which is strange to me, right? I do think that there are people who just don't like to read for whatever reason. It could be something that is long lasting that they don't like to read, but maybe something, you know, growing up, they felt ashamed about reading, or they just like never got into it.
Right. Maybe they want their narratives in a different package. You know?
Bingo. Maybe they listen to podcasts. Maybe they love a great TV series. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And books just like don't have that same appeal to them. And yet we're so quick to shame people who don't want to read. But people who are enthusiastic bicyclists don't shame people who aren't enthusiastic bicyclists for not doing that.
Ellie, can you confirm?
Well, some of us might. But yes, I agree with what you're saying, is that there is no shame in reading. And that used to be part of conversations that I would have with people coming to the library, mostly younger people, coming to the library to meet a requirement for school. And, mm-hmm. you know, that I have to read something. I have to read a historical fiction.
Yep.
And, you know, you see the kid and they're standing there and, you know, maybe the parent is with them and maybe they're not. And you're like, well, does it have to be a certain number of pages? And they're like, yes, it has to be 200. And it's like, okay. And I would ask them if they like to read. And I would say, it's totally fine if you don't.
Yeah.
Because that helps you find out, it helps you find the thing that's going to be a good fit. If a young person doesn't like to read, then you're not going to hand them The Witch of Blackbird Pond for their historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find something else. I think it's the same thing. And Anna made reference to our DVD patrons, and then she was talking about consuming narrative. And I have so many feelings about consuming narrative, because when I couldn't read or wasn't reading, I was watching movies. I was watching mm-hmm. TV series where I would watch 6 episodes of The West Wing in an evening. And I wasn't disconnected from storytelling. I just wasn't able to like do it alone in silence, which is one of the things that it can be very anxiety inducing if you're having that kind of situation where you like can hear the creaks in your old house, because reading mm-hmm. is easier without music playing for me. And so, you know, I can get myself really wound up if I'm alone and I'm reading.
Right. Yeah. I think too, I've seen this happen and I don't like it. And I think it's something worth bringing up at like with what we're talking about. I think that there's this idea that some believe we should try and get a book into the hands of everybody who comes into the library. Like,
No. And
I've seen teens who have this whole thing where they're afraid to come in because they don't read. They want to go to a program or whatever. Or they want to use the computers. This was a good one. They always want to use the computers. They come in after school, you know. They want to spend an hour playing their internet game. And sometimes they're afraid that, like, they're going to come in and be told that they need to read a book. And it's like, our job is not to do the bait and switch, you know. Like, not right. to get them in and then be like, surprise, books. It's like, it's okay. They can be there for whatever they want to be there for. And, like, we don't need to push a book on them.
I wish that more librarians subscribe to this because
I
feel like their fear is based on real interactions.
Yeah. No, the kids' fear is definitely based on experience. Yeah, and maybe sure. it was in their school library or maybe it was on a school visit when they were dragged to the library in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. But it happens.
Yep. Or it's a parent who's done it to them, you know?
Oh. Parents.
I think it's well-meaning, but I think it forgets that, like, again, reading's an activity. Consuming narrative in the form of a book is an activity. Sometimes you just don't want to do the thing, you know? Whether that's a temporary situation or something that is more permanent. Like, I see those studies all the time where they talk about, you know, X number of books is what the average American has read in the past year. Or, oh, my favorite are the ones where they're like teenagers in high school no longer read books for pleasure. You know, like you see these studies.
And it's well, that would be the adult's fault.
And it's like, well, one, it is probably partially the adult's fault. And two, it's like, hello, when you're between the ages of 14 and 18, you're in school for X number of hours a day. You have to have so many, you know, extra activities on top of that. You have commute times, whether you're taking the bus or you're walking or you're driving when you have your license. You know, that's not counting things like family time. That's not counting things like hanging out with your friends. That's not counting things like homework. It's like kids don't have time to sit down and eat dinner at the table, let alone like have time to read a book. You know, it's like these studies like to create this fear that reading is dying and that like there's so much that needs to be done and that like as soon as we see a kid we should shove a book in their face. And it's like, cool it. Like, kids who want to read will read. Those who are not reading, we don't have to push into it. They'll find it, or when they're ready to find it, they'll come and seek out the authority that they need, be it, you know, at the library or on Google. Like, it's fine. The kids are all right.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. And my child is mad because he has to do a reading log and show that he read X number of pages and he has to, like, write a sentence about, you know, the book for comprehension. And he's like, this makes me not want to read at all. Like, he's like, they're doing the opposite.
And this is a kid who we have to, like, extract from his book when it's time to eat. And so he's having this response.
Yeah.
If an unenthusiastic reader is going to have a stronger negative response.
Yeah, and it's only going to further push them away from, like, wanting to seek it out in the future. I've seen this mentality. I saw it a lot when I worked in libraries, and I still see it that, like, the reason that certain kids don't read is because they haven't found the right book. And it's like, okay, in some instances, sure. But I think a lot of the instances is kid just doesn't want to read yet. And you trying to, like, shove any book that might be that book at them isn't actually going to encourage them to seek out reading. It's going to make them feel like it's work, that it's an assignment, that it's a thing they have to do, which then furthers that gap between, you know, doing what they want to do and finding reading a pleasurable and enjoyable activity that they purposely seek out to do because they like it.
Yes.
Happy thoughts.
Last night I asked Anna to read me the headlines of the 7 tips. And is it okay if we look at those with you, Kelly?
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah. So let's presume that we're talking to people who are in a reading lull and who want to get out of it because they like reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. No, and that's why I think I wanted to, like, tell you guys how I related to this and how this, like, grabbed me, because the first thing you said is read something entirely out of the norm. And one of the things that first began to draw me back in were the memoirs of funny ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And I had read Bossy Pants and I liked it. And then it was much later that I read Tig by Tig Notaro and
Did you read Mindy Kaling? No.
I did read Mindy Kaling. I read her first one. And then but I also read, what is the one that Anna Kendrick wrote?
Oh, yeah.
I also read that. But part of it was audiobooks read by the performer. And these are performing ladies who do a really good job telling their stories.
Yeah.
I had never been a memoir or biography reader at all. And my general connection with nonfiction would be the narrative nonfiction of Simon Winchester and Eric Larson types of things.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
I find that for me, when I get in a lull, I need to do something different. So like I enjoy reading comics, but they aren't the thing I gravitate toward.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a reason why, because I enjoy them. But I do find when I'm in a slump, that's the first thing I'll go to, because I often find that I can really connect or like absorb myself in the narrative in a totally different way, in part because it has that visual aspect to it as well.
Yeah.
I think that the memoirs by funny ladies is a good one. I tend to gravitate toward those when I'm reading celebrity memoirs, but I don't pick up celebrity memoirs a whole lot. And that's another one that, like, sometimes that's the thing I need to pick up. Like, totally mindless celebrity junk. Like, you know? Which isn't shaming the book, but just, like, what I'm getting out of it is, like, junk food. I really enjoy it, but I don't pick it up regularly. And when I do, I remember that, like, oh, yeah, this feels good, you know?
Right, this is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate this beautiful, talented woman thinks like me a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or totally doesn't. Like Retta, I read her memoir a few years ago when I was in a reading slump. And she has this whole thing about working as a phone sex operator. And I was like, this is so out of anything I've ever experienced. And yet it's hilarious, you know? And I love sort of being that fly on the wall of this whole experience that, like, out of my norm, never going to have. And I can also, I hear it in her voice so well. And hers is a voice that sort of, like, you hear it all the time. You know, you see her all the time. And so there's something kind of comforting about that, and sort of, I don't want to say nurturing, but it nurtures that reading experience that brings you back to, like, oh yeah, this is why I like to read.
That's great. Do you have anything to say about reading out of the ordinary?
I like to read. So the only way I can read nonfiction is in audiobook form, really. Or at least I have to have the audiobook to get started, and then if I have the paper book, I can keep going with it. So sometimes when I'm having trouble focusing, I go to nonfiction just to, like, learn stuff about stuff.
That's an interesting thing that you just mentioned, though. I segregate my audio and print reading, and you can switch between them. You don't do it with everything.
I would if I could.
But there are books that you're listening to that you will refer to the print for character name spelling.
No, no.
No?
Like, the book that I started on the way home today, I made sure to check out in paper form so that when my ears get tired of my headphones, I can just turn off my audiobook and start reading the book.
Oh.
And I am just wanting to call that out because I don't think that is a common behavior.
I don't do that. I think I'm the same way as you in that I'm very, whatever format is, like I stick to it. I love audiobooks, but I find I can only listen to nonfiction. And when I'm listening to it, I don't want to pick up the book. Like, I don't. I just listen to the thing.
Oh, I have to pick, I have, the book has, like, the pictures and maps and, like, footnotes and stuff for nonfiction. So, I, like, even if I listen to the whole thing, I, like, have to check the book out at some point just so I can see what I missed. because an audiobook will often, like, leave out just something.
Well, and celebrity memoirs usually have some cute pictures from when they were kids.
Right,
yeah.
So that's good. The next one that got me, that really, like, hit me in the heart was revisit an old favorite book. And in my life, I've had a couple of books that I've reread several times. And going back to them has been very comforting. And I'm not a rereader by habit. Anna rereads on audiobook pretty routinely, think of old favorites.
Yeah, and I reread romances.
Yeah, and I have reread the Harry Potter books on audio, but I mostly have like three or four titles that I've reread in my life that I would go back to, and they have helped.
Yeah, I'm not a rereader either, and there are a handful of books that it's very much like when I'm in that lull, I go back to. Weirdly, one of them is a graphic novel. When I said, like, the format shifting, like, I guess this sort of, like, kickstarts that. But I've also got this novel that I've read probably every other year or so. I find myself picking it up again. And it's usually when I need that and when I'm in that lull and need something that I know is going to work for me. And I found that what I like about rereading that particular book and what I guess gives me sort of that kickstart to reading again is that I'm able to read it with new eyes and also from the perspective of the first time I read it, all the characters were older than me. And now as I read it, all the characters are like 10 years younger than me. And it's interesting to sort of like chart my own growth with this book, which hasn't changed, and really be able to see like where I have changed in relation to the book.
Is the name of the book a secret?
Oh, no, it's The Magician's Assistant by Ann Patchett.
Okay.
Really?
Cool. Yeah.
Do you have rereads? Do you have, like, specific rereads? Or do you just sort of, like dip into your collection? They're mostly, like,
Regency and lesbian romances where I'm like, I like this book and I'm going to read it because I know it will make me feel good.
Yeah.
And romance is great because you know you're going to get that happily ever after, you know?
Exactly. Thank you, romance.
Yeah.
Before my reading slump or lull or hiatus really kicked in when it kicked in, which maybe was 10 years ago, I was exclusively reading romances. And I was tearing through them at a pretty fast clip. And then when it tapered off, I was still reading them, but I wasn't reading anything else ever. Like, not even favorite mystery writers or anything. I was just like, only reading romances. And then I wasn't reading anything.
And here we are.
No, it's interesting because romance is a genre that, like, is predictable. You know exactly what you're going to get. The story's going to change, but you know at the end, like, you're going to get that happily ever after. And there's something really comforting about that, both when you're in a reading lull and also, like, if you're struggling with your mental health, there's something just, like, something about genre, knowing that there are certain conventions that make it appealing. For me, I love horror. And I love horror because I know there are certain conventions and also because I know that whatever I'm going through is not as bad as whatever's going on in the book. And there's something great about that. And I just, it's weirdly comforting to me to read that. And I heard other readers talk about that as well, that horror can be this super comforting genre to read because you know exactly what you're going to get when you go into it. And, you know, at the end, like, it might not be a happy ending, but that's okay because you went in knowing that. Whereas same thing, but sort of the opposite in romance. You can go into the romance and know at the end you're going to get that happily ever after. And, you know, be able to enjoy the ride knowing that the end is going to be this very thing. And that's great both in terms of being in that stuck place with reading as well as being in that stuck place in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. The nature of my anxiety is such that I cannot read non-genre when I am feeling anxious. I can't tolerate it. And half the time I'm reading a romance and something is going on that is completely peripheral to the relationship. And I'm like, Anna will maybe have read it already. And I'll say, I need to know if her class is if she's going to get an okay grade in her class, because she's fretting about this and now I'm fretting about it and it's keeping me from enjoying the book.
Yeah.
I have cultivated a group of people who will spoil things for me because I need spoilers to be able to manage to read things that are not genre. And I have, I'm like required to do that. And it's one of the reasons that I still want to read romance. And it's one of the reasons that I'll read historical fiction that's based on truth, that a story that I already know, because I can manage that. It's very interesting.
You know what's going on or what's going to happen. Yeah.
I'm not good at scheduling reading or making it a date, although occasionally I'll say, what are we watching tonight? And Anna will say, we're going to sit on the sofa and read. And I'll say, okay, we can do that. Do you have it as, Kelly, do you have it as part of your like weekly routine where you have windows of reading set in your calendar?
I'm trying to do that more. One of the things I was doing for a while that I found really, really successful was that I get up early in the morning, and we're talking like 5 o'clock early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I tried to make it a habit that I wouldn't turn on my computer until after 7, which meant that basically the only thing to do was read, which was great. It worked great. And then I fell back into my habit of like checking things as soon as I got up and falling down that rabbit hole. But I'm trying to come back into that place because it was a great way to start my day doing this thing that was for me. So I was using that time to read for me as opposed to read for work, because I do have to read some stuff for Book Riot. Like that's part of my job. Mm-hmm. And at times that means like what I want to read sort of falls by the wayside, but this was a way for me to really harness that and read for me. So the long and short of it is I get in the habit and then sort of fall out of it. And I'm hoping to get back into it. I used to read at night, but I am one of those people that when I start reading at night, if it's not really, really grabbing me, I'm going to fall asleep. And it's not the book's fault. It's just like, that's just how my brain works. It's like, all right, done, you know, 7 yep. o'clock, done.
What about you, Anna?
I'm basically reading every chance I get.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm just reading too many things at once.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my estimation of it, not exterior.
No, but I see it too. Like, we are shopping at Trader Joe's together, and I say, I'm going to go get some popcorn, and I come back and you're standing by the cart reading a book on your phone.
Oh my God, that's amazing, though. Like, I love that image, because I am not that person.
Yeah.
One thing I do, and I haven't done it because I've been listening to a podcast nonstop for the last month, but I used to listen to audiobooks a lot because I had a commute to work. But now that I work at home, I don't have that commute. And I listen to my audiobooks like when I'm doing those sorts of tasks that don't require my brain. So when I take a shower in the morning, I'll listen to an audiobook. When I'm getting ready, I'll listen to an audiobook. If I'm doing laundry or cleaning the house, like an audiobook will be playing. And that's sort of another way I get in my time. But it's not generally like timed, you know, it's just like in these pockets of time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's good. Like, I know that audiobooks don't work for some people. And like Liberty of Book Riot, we've talked to her about audiobooks, and she's like, I can't do them, which is interesting because she reads like 500 books a year or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. She is just, I do the All the Books podcast with her, which means I have to read, you know, a boatload of books for 1 week a month.
She does like, them every week, and she's amazing, but she doesn't do audiobooks.
Yeah, that's incredible to me, because it's just like, that's how I'm getting through as much as I am able to get through.
Same, because it's recently been harder for me to just like read a book with print, you know, a print book or an ebook, and then audiobook like just helps me get into it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I feel like some people, I'm not saying Liberty is one of them, but some people have like, they haven't tried a range of audiobooks. Like they've tried a couple and they've been like, ugh. Or they've tried it while they're driving, and you know, driving takes a lot of your attention, and you, if you're trying to give a book the attention it deserves, if it's that kind of book and you're also driving, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But if you are doing, like, if you're sitting at home like I am and, like, playing my phone game on my day off, just staring into space, like, there's no reason I can't be listening to an audiobook while I'm doing that.
Right.
Yeah. And this is exactly how I found out that I can only listen to nonfiction on audio, because when I try to listen to fiction, I sometimes space in and out. And yep. Listening to fiction, it's like I was just spending so much time rewinding to catch an important detail. Whereas nonfiction, it's like sometimes you can zone out for 15, 20 minutes and come back and you haven't missed anything. You haven't crucial.
Really, it's true. You haven't really missed anything at all, and it's fine.
Well, and it's also, it's a processing thing. I don't process information that I take in auditorily. I am challenged by auditory learning. Mm-hmm. And so I lose my train when it's fiction. I can listen in the car. I can listen at home if I am maybe folding laundry or my eyes hurt and I'm lying on the sofa or something. It takes a different kind of work for me. And for fiction, it's just too slow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fast reader in the world of book people, but I am a faster reader than an audiobook, and I get bored listening to fiction, where I don't understand half of the nonfiction I listen to, so I'm not bored. I'm sort of like, I wonder what the hell they're talking about.
So I think that's number five, listen.
Oh, yeah, that was number five.
Yeah. Just change up the method of taking the story in.
Right. Just try it.
And I think, too, this is an opportunity to say, like, adaptations are great as well. You know, watch that adaptation. Watch your Game of Thrones. Watch your To All the Boys I Loved Before. You know, whether you've read the book or not, sometimes taking it in a visual format is, like, the great way to jumpstart your reading.
When we watched To All the Boys I Loved Before, I was like, I want to read those books now and find out what happens next, mm-hmm. right?
And I was like, woo, now I don't need to read the books because I know enough about them to tell people to read them.
There you go. Yeah, it works both ways. That's the beauty of it.
We skipped number four, which is clean the shelves and our library holds and checkouts.
Yes.
Which I do periodically. Like, when I switch books, I was like, okay, I'm not reading this 10 books or whatever anymore. And this morning or yesterday morning, we stood in front of the place where we keep all of our library checkouts. And I was like, Aline, you're going to take this back and this back and this back because you haven't read them. And yep. Someone else needs them. And, you know, I do the same for myself. I'm not usually so autocratic with Aline's holds.
But it's totally reasonable. It was like, you're right. I brought this home and I was wild to read it, and it has been here for a month and I'm not reading it, so it can go back.
Right. Someone else can have it.
There's something just like really pleasing about cleaning that shelf, returning it all to the library and being like fresh slate.
Yep.
You know?
I sometimes think about the poor people who've been waiting for me to, like, actually return it to the library. Because just as it is very easy for me to start another book, it is super easy for me to, like, just while I'm on desk be like, ooh, that's an interesting book. I'll just check it out to myself. And then I don't read it. I don't do anything. I don't even start it. I just have it.
You do that a lot.
I just have it. And that isn't helping anyone, really.
The last one on your list is allow myself to simply not read, which we've talked about.
Yep.
And so I wanted to just sort of, like, let that one go. But you say focus on helping other people find a good book by writing about recent favorites or talking with others about books that remind you of them. This is what I do at work. I go around and I like do Blitzkrieg Reader's Advisory. And if I see someone hesitate next to a display because they're looking at something, I like descend upon them and I'm like, hi, what are you looking for? You got something good there? What have you been reading? You want me to help you find a book? And they they take it very well, the patrons at my library. They usually do allow me to talk to them. And I really get a lot out of it because I ask them what they've been reading or what they've got in. Sometimes they've already got things in their hands and what grabbed them. And, you know, sometimes something will come into my head right away and sometimes something won't. And I'll be like, let me show you this. Did you know that we have this? Because we have these pockets of interesting things in the library that are not always evident to the casual passerby.
Yeah. Something I have seen done, I haven't done it myself, is I see people that I know, whether they're book people or not, will post on Facebook, like, what have you been reading lately? Or I read this great book, you know, what have you read that you've loved lately? And it's like, those are great opportunities to like jump in and remember that like you have this knowledge of books or it's an opportunity too for like the average reader. Here's what they're reading. Here's what they're talking about. And it's like, I think when you are in the book world, you get so stuck in like newest, greatest, biggest, blah, 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 all those things. And you forget that like there are still people who are just discovering The Hunger Games. There are people who are just discovering Gone Girl, who are just discovering this, that, and the other thing that like we are, you know, over because they happened however many years ago. But like to the average reader, just discovering it is still exciting, you know, picking up It, even though it came out 30 years ago, picking it up in advance of the second part of the movie, like that's exciting for some readers. And seeing that enthusiasm and like being able to be part of that enthusiasm really gets you back to like what it's all about. It's not about like the splashy. It's about just like connecting with a book, period. The end.
Yep.
This is another, like, the librarians who are like, well, of course you've heard of that, are not offering the obvious choice to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we say when we're doing our reader's advisory training is that, like, sometimes if you say, like, well, have you read The Hunger Games? If you, they come in asking for dystopian YA, or that you're understanding what they're looking for, they'll be like, yeah, of course, but they know that you know what they're asking for. Like, that's just something that will ping them so that they can know you're on the right track and you're having the conversation. Like, or they haven't ever read Louise Penny's first book and they will have discovered something new and exciting and here's a new series for them.
Yep.
Yep, the number of people who adore Donna Leon and have never read Louise Penny, or who adore Louise Penny and have never read Donna Leon, constantly amazes me. And those are really good matches for them, and they usually come back saying, this is great.
Mm-hmm. And being able to, like, have those conversations with an average reader or somebody who, like, they read, you know, 3 books a year because that's all they can fit in, or like that's the time that they have in their lives to like read a good book, a book that's really going to catch their attention. Like remembering that, at least for me, really like re-sparks my enthusiasm for books. I find sometimes like when I'm writing a newsletter, so I write our Book Riot's YA newsletter, which goes out to like 55,000 people. It's obscene how huge it is.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it like every time I see that number, I'm like, holy cow. I don't often write a lot of reviews in it. When I do, I remember like why I love reading. Like, you know, you could write all these book lists, you can do all the things that you know serve readers well, but when you also sit down and are reflecting on the things that you've read and like what stood out to you in those things and like what it is you want to pull from what you've read to share with others, like there's something about that that just sort of like reignites that spark and makes you want to read more because you want to remember like, oh yeah, this is why I like doing this. And these are the things that like make reading exciting and make finding these books that connect with me exciting. Yeah. And sometimes it's not the reading. Sometimes it's reflecting on the reading life more broadly.
I feel like reading now.
Should we wrap up and go read something?
Please, it's almost 9:30 my time, which means it's like 20 minutes
past her bedtime.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Well, we should. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add? I feel like we've covered. I'm really happy with the conversation we've had about lulls and hiatuses and reading habits and tips.
No, this was great. And it's funny because I've been off work for a lot of days. Like, I took a long vacation and I needed it. Like, it was great. It was wonderful. I got away and I didn't read. It was,
wow.
Wait, but it was great. It was so great. Because when I came back, I was like, I hadn't read in like a week and a half. And suddenly I was like, all right, I'm voracious for books again. And thought to myself, like, what do I want to read? I'm like, you know what? I want a book like this. And I was able to pull out a book like that. And I blew through it in no time. I have this problem, and I'm sure that this is a fairly common problem, that it's easy to get distracted when you're reading because you have the internet, you have your phone, like, yes, you have all these things that, like, okay, after I read three chapters, I'm going to check this or look at this. And it's rare anymore where there's a book that I can just, like, say, I'm just going to read it cover to cover and not do any of that stuff. And so when I was able to pick up a book and do that this week, it was wonderful. It was one of those, like, I knew exactly what I needed. I found exactly what I needed. And I was able to, like, have that really great immersive reading experience and not worry about, like, the world outside of the book.
That's great.
Yeah. And when that happens, it's always a nice, like, oh yeah, sometimes taking those breaks really allows you to remember, like, what pleasure you get out of reading and, like, what you really enjoy reading and why you really enjoy reading.
Every time that reading starts to feel like a chore is a chance to evaluate, you know, whether you should keep going with the book or whether, you know, whether you should have gone back to school. No, I just mean, like, you know, what you want to get out of it and what it's doing for you, because it is a pastime and you could do something else with your time if that would give you more pleasure, if it's not working for you.
Yep, bingo.
And that's the moral of this episode.
The moral of this episode. Well, awesome. So, Kelly, do you have a musical obsession to share with us?
You know, I don't. Can I tell you a podcast obsession I have right now?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm not allowed to say this word on the podcast. So I'm trying to figure out, like, a way.
You can say it and I'll just bleep it.
No, I'll figure out a way to say it. So I'm, I am obsessed with thought work right now. And part of it has to do with mental health. Part of it is also, the certification I'm doing to finish getting my yoga life coach certification, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so there's this great podcast called UnF/CK, Your Brain, and by Carl Lowenthal. And it's this excellent short form podcast. They're all like 15 to 20 minutes long, of these ways to rethink and to reframe your thoughts and think about your thinking in really fascinating ways. And that has been the podcast that has, like, absorbed my attention for the past month. They're, like, the right length for me to get in, like, when I'm taking a shower or washing up a load of dishes. And she's like a former lawyer / law professor who went into life coaching. And now, like, this is what she does. And it's just, like, fascinating. I cannot get enough of it. And so that's my recommendation. It's UnF Your Brain. but the word, but also without the U, spelled the polite way as she says it.
Okay. It sounds great. And relevant. I should probably, like, give it a try.
I was going to say, it sounds about the length of your commute.
Yeah. And, yeah. And you don't have to start at the beginning or anything. I did because I'm a completionist like that, but you can just scroll through the episodes and find something that, you know, that interests you or that you've been thinking about. And there is this, oh man, there's this one about that I can't stop thinking about. And like, I'm still talking, but I'm going to, so we're going with
it. It's fine. It's fine.
The whole idea of what our personalities are. And like, my mind was blown by this idea that we don't actually have personalities, that we are nothing but a collection of our thoughts and actions that we did based on those thoughts and feelings. And like, I can't stop thinking about it because it's so smart and like also so right. You're like, whoa, whoa, you know?
Oh my God.
Your mind will be blown. Yeah.
This is good. This is good. I like it.
Yeah.
Do you have a musical obsession, Anna?
I do. Well, since we recorded our last episode, Carly Rae Jepsen released a new album. I picked one off the album. I think I was obsessed with her last time, but this time I know all of the songs. And so I'm going to pick Automatically in Love.
Okay, thank you. I have a list of musical obsessions in my phone now that where I write down books. Where I write down songs that I hear in movies or whatever that I am grabbed by. And there is a song over the closing credits of The Hustle, which is the Rebel Wilson Anne Hathaway movie that is basically Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with ladies. The song is called Badass Woman, and I don't know who the artist is, but I will put it in the show notes and on the Musical Obsessions playlist.
Okay. I mean, I approve.
Do you have a regular obsession, Anna?
I do. It is a fluffy TV show called Whiskey Cavalier.
Oh, I love Whiskey Cavalier.
Starring, what's his name from Felicity?
Scott Foley.
Am I dating myself?
You are.
starring Scott Foley as a...
He was on Scandal as well.
Very emotional CIA agent who has a lot of feelings.
He really does.
And his female partner who is tough and no-nonsense and does not want to develop attachments to anything. So it's a nice flipping of the usual male-female dynamic that you might see where she is like a ball of rage and he is like a single tear coming down his face. And they have a great, like, team of people that they work with. And it's like a nice friend show. And I feel like it would be good viewer's advisory for people who love Leverage.
Excellent.
How about you?
My regular obsession is a new Netflix series that just dropped on Friday. And we watched the first half of it Friday night. There are 10 episodes. So we watched 5 episodes. And they are 21 to 27 minute episodes. And it is called Trinkets. And it is about 3 young women who are connected when they are all 3 required to attend Shoplifters Anonymous or something similar to that. And it is set in Portland, and these are extremely cool young women. The show is based on a book
yeah.
by Kirsten Smith, my childhood friend. And
what?
Oh, yeah. The writer of 10 Things I Hate About You and Legally Blonde and other fun lady movies. And she's written a couple of books. And this one is great. The thing that I really love about reading her teen stuff, she wrote a novel in verse called The Geography of Girlhood, and then she wrote Trinkets. And I love reading her works and seeing the way an author puts characters together with elements of people they've known in their lives, because we have a shared youth, and there are people and characteristics I recognize. Like this one, it's like that one, that part of her is me, but that part of her is this other friend of ours, and that part of her is this other friend of ours. It's a really good show, and it's really interesting, and I have that like level of engagement that makes me like really, really squealy happy too.
I love that. I didn't know that you were friends. I want to watch that. And haven't yet, because I'm terrible about TV.
No, no judgment.
No judgments anywhere. So we're watching the credits, and I was like, oh, I know that name. So we know that that person. And Anna looks her up, and she's like, it's Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Mm-hmm. And so we were, like, super excited that we had an X-Man on our hands in this teen series that was really good. So you gave us a regular obsession for your musical obsession. Did you have anything else you wanted to share obsession-wise, Kelly? It's totally fine if you don't.
I'm obsessed with seltzer. Does that count?
Yes. What kind of seltzer?
Listen, I have, like, I'm in the super secret seltzer group on Facebook, and it's the best thing in the world, right? And it's my favorite group on the internet, and it's private, and, like, all we do is talk about seltzer. It's great. But I am not a LaCroix fan. It doesn't really have enough flavor for me. I love Polar, which I know we'll get some shout outs from the East Coast folks.
Local. Yep.
But Topo Chico is really where it's at. It's excellent. It's a mineral seltzer, and it's from Mexico. And true story, I was in Mexico last week and got to have it with my lunch and have, like, the Mexican Topo Chico is great.
Excellent.
Yeah, generally you can find it, if you can find it in the grocery store, it might be in the Mexican food section. My local grocery store has it just with their, like, their Mexican food, I guess is the best way to describe it, down that aisle. Mm-hmm. Where you find, like, all the Mexican beans and spices and everything. They have, like, some of the various Mexican drinks, and you can find it there. It comes in glass bottles, which is great. You can get it in plastic, but frankly, if you can get glass, one, it's going to taste better, and two, it's better for the environment. So
yeah,
do your thing.
I feel like I can visualize the label, so I must have seen it somewhere. We also have market, so if we don't have it at our supermarket, I can check the Latin market.
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed. All the way.
Great, that sounds good.
Hey, we made it to the end of our show. Okay,
and I have a cat here now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's good. I'm glad. You sure? We have a cat that just came in and, like, gently rested a flank against my leg. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Bellwether Friends, BellwetherFrnds. You can find us on Facebook. We sometimes tumble things. If you want, you can look us up on iTunes, leave us a review, so that we know 1 to 2 people are still listening to this podcast. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SurlySpice. Kelly, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram as Verona Kelly Mars. That's V as in victory, E-R-O-N-I. K-E-L-L-Y-M-A-R-S. I had to remember how to spell it.
Right. This is not a math/spelling test.
I know, but geez, I've been, like, put through the ringer on both of them.
I know, right?
It's Veronica, but Verona Kelly.
Got it. Yeah. Yes. Thanks for joining us. This is a good discussion.
Yeah, I'm really glad you were able to join us today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for this great conversation.
Great. Our in and out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie.